So about a month ago, I did my Rip Van Winkle sermon, talking about if I had been asleep, as Ed would say much of America has been for the last 40 years, and I woke up, what would have changed? The great issues that we were wrestling with then are still going on. What were the great issues 40 years ago? We were battling for voters' rights, particularly for minorities. We were voting for and rallying for clean air and clean water. There was somebody, we were also fighting, incidentally, for or against a peripheral canal up in Northern California, and somebody named Brown was governor. We were trying not to get into a war with the Soviet Union. And from Rasputin to Putin, there seems to be tremendous continuity as we wake up 40 years late. Well, that was a little past Rasputin's time, but you got to notice the linguistics there. We were boycotting Cuba because that was going to change the regime within hours. And we were telling the congressmen and senators to please heed our call. Don't stand in the doorways. Don't block up the halls. I just woke up and they're standing in the doorways. They're blocking up the halls. And you look around and you can say, you know, maybe Dylan was wrong. Maybe the times are not a change. And maybe it's just the same thing. Maybe it's just Groundhog's Day. But it's not. Sometimes change happens so fast and so seamlessly that we actually kind of miss it. We still have horrendous racist rhetoric that goes on in this nation, but a lot of it is coded. A lot of it is what they call dog whistle. But instead of screaming at black people at lunch counters at Woolworths, there is no lunch counter at Woolworths except in Santa Fe, I think. We're screaming racist rhetoric at somebody in the White House. This is progress of a kind. There's still homophobia as well as racism, but look at the amount of change in that area. It really is maybe too slow, but also at the same time stunning. And when you ask some older people, particularly, because a lot of this goes down on a generational basis, the social changes are just really extraordinary. So there are some old issues that we still fight and refight, but there are changes in our society that some of us really only literally dreamed about and didn't expect to accomplish. There are also places where we are backsliding and have to fight again and again and again. I was counseling somebody who was not from this congregation, so don't look around. I was counseling somebody who was feeling just despairing. This person had worked hard for social change in the 60s and believed in the 60s the times they were a-changin' and we were going to win. But no victories are final, and no defeats are final. We are called in every generation to fight for the gains that we have made, to fight to hold them, sometimes to sell them again, to educate again, because the good news and the bad news are related. No final victories and no final defeats. We're called upon to engage. Does this seem to some like Sisyphus? You just roll the rock up the mountain and then try not to be crushed when it rolls back down? Well, maybe a little, but the analogy that I like to make is the following one, and don't feel like I'm putting you on the spot, but how many of you took showers this morning or baths? How many think that they're going to have to take a shower and a bath again tomorrow? Is that futile? Is that absurd? Is that Sisyphistic? We wash and we still get dirty. What's the point? No. It's we wash, we clean, we get involved in life, and we go back in the same rhythms to engage important issues again. This is personal ecology, and that battle of personal ecology has to be fought a couple of times a day. And according to my dentist, it includes dental floss, but we are talking about that. We're involved in something that is continual and ongoing about change and change in society. And I had planned this before the ad lib. Take technology. I have the Library of Alexandria in my pocket. I've got an ability to reach out across a world to text, to send pictures, I'm afraid to sext, and other sort. And I'm going to get to that. Don't check your phones now. I'm only getting to it in theory. But we have this extraordinary ability to communicate, to connect, to be a part and feel a part of the world. Now, it's true, sometimes we use it to keep ourselves apart from each other. I love this story because it's so hideous, a couple coming into a sushi restaurant, each one on the phone, having the entire meal, and leaving and never once exchanging a word with each other. We are so potentially connected that we're not connected. We also can not make eye contact because we're working our little machines. I see people in classrooms texting away. And I would forbid it, of course, except I'm powerless to do that. And those of you who are texting now, shame on you. The Lord does see you. But the Lord is obviously busy not texting but operating the remote control on ESPN, because every time anybody scores a run or blocks a field goal, it was God that blessed them with that. And that explains the condition of the world, because God is watching sports. That's a male God, obviously. A female God is doing something else. But our technologies... the changes are extraordinary, and the changes mean something other than just convenience or inconvenience. The technology changes change our lives and our values. From horses to cars, we went from cities to suburbs. From suburbs, your children are beyond your control. They got the keys to the car. Changed our sexual mores with those kinds of freedoms. As pharmacology changed sexual mores. The technology has an impact on how we see ourselves and how we lead our lives. One of the great issues of change that's difficult for an older generation, I'm going to get generational about this, is the joke about sexting. Now, there was no sexting when I had a body that might have been worth sexting. Now that I don't have a body that I even want to see myself in a mirror, the whole idea is completely disgusting. But technology has changed people's sense of privacy. Things that seem invasive to people of my generation are just kind of normal in terms of what folks are posting on Facebook, what they're sending on Instagrams, and other kinds of media where people exchange pictures, information, ideas, and the boundaries are different, and they were made different by the technology. You can be King Canute and say, stop the tide, and try to stop the change, but it's futile. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. And we need to learn to live with these kinds of social changes, values changes, and technological changes. And a lot of them are really good. We have gone from Paul Revere's ride and hanging a lantern aloft in the belfry of the Old North Church to being able to tweet the revolution. the revolution will be not simply televised, but will be on all of your devices. And crowds and flash mobs can be convened and dispersed through instant communication. Some of this is good, some of this is bad, and a lot of this is up to how the technology is used. But we can never pretend that it is stoppable and that it is changeable. One of the questions I got, I was teaching a course in a home this week, was about whether China was going to really allow the internet to happen and to flourish. And countries have a choice. In an information technology, are you going to be part of the 21st century? Or are you going to stay out of all of that evolution and technological information revolution because you're trying to restrict communications? The answers are really kind of inevitable. But people, one of the things about change that is consistent is that change is always resisted. It's always in some ways threatening. I remember once, just to show a group of Unitarians how hidebound and traditional even Unitarians could be, I showed up in a robe, not a bathrobe, terry cloth that says the champ on the back, but ecclesiastic, actually academic robe, and I moved the pulpit from one side to the other. Nothing substantive, but people felt uncomfortable because we get into routines and any change is questioned. Any change creates, well, if we've done it like this up until now and we're doing it differently, were we wrong? I was comfortable this way. If you change even one little thing, it's going to make me uncomfortable. It's difficult stuff to deal with. It's difficult stuff for me to deal with. I had an experience of this week. I want to tell you, these newfangled things are just terrible. I downloaded iOS 7 onto my iPad, and I hated it, and I want to go back. But having gone into the Apple store and pled my cause, there is no going back. March or die, adapt or be left on the ice floe. And so I'm going to learn to love my new masters at iOS 7. So, you know, you get a sense of resistance. There is bringing together, as you mentioned, the Jewish and the Christian. There is a midrash. The midrash is what's called in Judaism the oral Torah. You have all the words that are written, and then you have stories. You have embroidery. And there's a wonderful midrash about Moses. Moses is told, you know, you've been good, but you don't get to live in the promised land. And Moses, it's time for you to die. And Moses, strangely enough, not coming from Hollywood, said the most Hollywood thing in any midrash. He said, "Do you know who I am? And I'm Moses. I'm your prophet. I did all this for you." And God said, "You did it for me. I did it for you." And Moses, "I'm not dying. You got to let me go into the promised land. I'm too important." And in one midrashic story, Moses is allowed to stand outside the tent of meeting where the people are talking, and he's listening, and he doesn't understand a word. Now, you can interpret this as the first mention of dementia in Scripture. That's possible. Or being hard of hearing, or as a metaphor for the torch, the baton, is passed from generation to generation. And as the people who have been running it are starting to slow down, and the people who are going for the next lap are starting to speed up, there's some difficulty often in that exchange, and some awkwardness, and some fumbling because no one wants to admit they're slowing down. And they're not quite ready to have the baton all by themselves. But they are, and they do, and get out of the way if you can't lend a hand, for the times they are changing, as times must, as adjustment is important and inevitable. Now, obviously, at some level, for those of you who were here last week, I'm speaking in fairly clear code about the fact that I'm going to be retiring in June, and that there are, in any changes, losses and gains and awkwardness as you trip over your feet, passing batons, but the nature of batons is to be passed from generation to generation. The nature of human beings is to resist for a moment, even as I resisted iOS 7, and then to accept, to explore, and to master these things. And it's important to master. Change and adjustment are hard, but it's actually, and we could have a whole talk back about this with responsible differing points of view, it's what human beings do best. Imperfectly, but best. We are not the strongest animals in the world. We are not the fastest animals in the world. We are adjusters. You could say that actually we may not even be the brightest animals in the world. The whales and dolphins and the cetaceans had the good sense to know the trouble the thumbs could get them into. Hence, they don't have nuclear buttons to push, and they don't text each other. And they decided to go back into the ocean and get fins and flippers. That was probably a good career move, which we might consider. But we as human beings live very vulnerable lives, very vulnerable to disease, but we build up immunities, very vulnerable to changes of temperature, but we created clothing, eventually air conditioning, eventually heating. We are great generalists and adapters. That's our comparative advantage. We need to work on the wisdom thing, but we are good adapters. But our adaptations need to be considered. Our evolutions are not automatic and permanent. They are best done when we are introspective, finding out what we value as individuals, that we actually communicate with each other, not simply texting, but face to face and heart to heart with open hearts, and that when we adjust to the technology, I have to tell you, I was feeling like Moses outside the tent of meeting when the cello was being played and I'm watching you press the repeater, press a button, change a button, all record yourself, then play with the recording, then turn it on and turn it off and reverberate it and have three things going on here, two things going on there, and I'm going, I don't understand. Now, I can't do what Gary did either in terms of that, but at least I grew up with it and I understand that you can probably do two things at once and maybe even three with singing and four with the harmonica, but at that point, I get overwhelmed. Because when you are plucking and strumming and beating and recording and super dubbing and looping, it's, oh, I am so happy to pass the baton to another generation and sit back and just really enjoy it and don't have to understand. And I think that that's a nice way to live. Examine what's important to us in this world. Examine those issues that still call upon us to not be Rip Van Winkle and to go to sleep, but act as if we're awake, to fight, to create, and to sustain the values that we have and that we have achieved, to be refreshed by the victories that we have won, but never to consider them to be final victories. There are always counter-revolutions. to the feminist movement, there's a counter-revolution. To the gay movement, there is and will be a counter-revolution. To be aware that whatever we create, there will be pushback, and don't be crushed by the pushback. Don't be crushed that we have to re-engage again and again to create and sustain those things that we value. We may have to change how it is that we engage them because the technology changes and time changes, but it is still our job at every age to be a part of society, of what is happening today and making it better and freer and deeper for every coming generation, and to accept the passages from generation to generation, and to have confidence that as difficult as it is sometimes to let go as the kids grow up, tomorrow is their world in which we can still participate as long as we are alive, but our role changes. For those of you who have signed up, and I think we have a full house Tuesday for the butler, there is just a wonderful moment that we have three openings. There is a wonderful moment that says it all to me when the butler, who has stayed out of politics his entire life, at some point in relative old age, goes to a rally that his son is conducting in terms of freedom for South Africa from apartheid, and the son thinks that he's there to protest against the son. And he said, "No, I'm here to be part of this." And that becomes the job. At one point, a generation teaches a generation. At another point, that generation learns from the next generation. That's a dance that we do, and it's a beautiful dance. And no generation is entirely in love with the music of the next generation. You all recognize that. I know whatever age and generation you are. I mean, my parents grew up with, "This Gershwin guy, who's he?" But we adjust. I guess I'll go out on a light note, which was, I remember my son is in a band, and he's been in a band a long time, and they've done 5, 6, 7 different records. And after they did the first one, I came up to him and I said, "I hope you're not insulted by this, but I like your music." And he didn't know how to take it. So the issues of communication are always fraught. But with goodwill and open hearts, we make it happen.